You can swear off French fries and live at the gym, but it won't get rid of certain stubborn pockets of fat. Those need to get iced with CoolSculpting. It's the newest non-surgical solution at the Plastic Surgery Clinic. CoolSculpting freezes fat cells in problem areas so your body can just flush them away forever. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and book your free consultation. CoolSculpting at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. It stops fat cells cold.
He's an author, and this is his three-hour audiobook. Wonder who dies in the end? Let's find out. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
How to do every day because, you know, David Price is a pretty big deal here. So it's your daily David Price update brought to you by nobody in particular. While you were busy complaining, by the way, about Jay Happ signing here and how that pretty much eliminated David Price from coming back to Toronto, David Price on Twitter was writing, and I quote, "My Starbucks card won't allow me to reload. Does anyone else have this problem? If so, how do you fix it?" David Price also went on to say on Twitter, and I quote, he's clearly pretty broken up about the news about Toronto. "It's pretty chilly in Vegas. That means my golf ball is going to go normal distance or nah. Now I'm really confused." So there you are. That's your daily David Price update on the Jeff Blair Show. And as you can tell, really, really, really disappointed that most people seem to think that the signing of Jay Happ means that he's not coming back to Toronto. He's worried about his golf ball in Vegas and his Starbucks card. I'm sure David could scrape some pennies together for his cup of Joe, even if the Starbucks card wasn't reloaded. The big story in sports today, one of the big stories in sports today, is the announcement that Kobe Bryant is retiring from the NBA. And just in time, wouldn't you know it, our friend Darren Revelle on Twitter has posted a hat, two new logos for Kobe Bryant, KB20 for 20 years with Lakers and HV for hero villain. So they're already marketing Kobe Bryant's retirement. It's a marketing strategy. Kobe Bryant's going to make money on the way out the door. Unbelievable. Michael Granger, Sportsnet, joins us. This is great, isn't it?
It's the modern way, right?
It's like tremendous.
Monetize every moment.
Unbelievable. The hats are actually quite catchy. They're quite, I actually kind of like them, to be honest.
I mean, you know, it's Kobe, right? Like, he gave himself the Black Mamba nickname. You know, he's, Kobe is the star of his own movie that he wrote and directed.
Mike, I want to talk about your column on Kobe and an interesting analysis of just why his game is not as effective as it used to be and how the game has passed him by. But just a simple question, and we're fans of lists always. Where do you rank Kobe? You know, among, I'm not going to say amongst the all time greats, because I think it's so hard in this sport to look back at what guys did in the 60s and 70s even and try to compare them to what guys are doing now. But, I mean, let's say post-Magic Bird, which is when I think a lot of us started watching the NBA and paying attention to it. Where do you put Kobe in your own personal rankings?
Well, I mean, among active players, he's probably certainly in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's... You know, I put him behind Tim Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
I put him behind Kevin Garnett. I put him behind, he's got the ring, so it makes it tough. But look, I don't really have a quibble with Kobe Bryant being called a great player, because he is. And he, more than anything else, he's an incredibly consistent player. He's been able to play at an amazing level for really about 15 straight years, which is almost unprecedented, particularly at the position he played. But the argument I get in with people is people confuse that with his overall greatness. And all of a sudden, you know, because he's the third all-time leading scorer of all time, you know, he's somewhere in the conversation with Michael Jordan or LeBron or some of the other greats. And for me, he's not. You know, nobody talks about Karl Malone as maybe one of the top five players of all time, even though he's the second leading scorer of all time. And I would argue that Kobe Bryant has more in common with Karl Malone than, you know, Michael Jordan. But that's just me. I find he's kind of when Jordan came into the game, the game was always built around point guards and centers. And, you know, a point guard facilitated the offense and the center was sort of the object of the offense. And Jordan kind of broke that wide open. And all of a sudden it became, you know, your best player was a wing player and he had freedom to attack at all times. And he was so overwhelming that it kind of spawned imitators. And Kobe Bryant is kind of like the next generation of that. And the only thing is Kobe Bryant's not Michael Jordan. And, you know, I think he also came with this force of will. And when you think about this, I mean, you've been around pro sports more and longer than I have. To go into a pro team environment and just impose yourself on that team, regardless of circumstance, it's an unimaginable feat, right? Like,
yes.
Every guy in that room is some sort of alpha dog or has been at some point. And Kobe Bryant's, if anything, he's the greatest alpha dog in NBA history, maybe besides Michael Jordan.
That's a great way to put it. And I would argue, and we had a caller in the last hour, I think, you know, say one of the reasons that he thought Michael, you know, had separated himself from the other players and certainly compared much more favorably than Kobe is that as Michael got older, you know, Michael was still the star, but as Michael got older, there were room for other players to play with him, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it, and it's kind of like the caller has made my point in about 30 seconds that I took about 2 minutes.
No, but that's.
But yeah, that's it. I mean, and he kind of, and I guess what, you know, when you look at where Kobe's been since his championship years, he's never adjusted his game. And look, very, very, very few people in pro sports leave anywhere near the peak of their power. So, you know, you can't really judge a guy for, in his last year, being a shadow of himself. I mean, we've seen that over and over again. But Kobe's case is a little different, and this is why I do judge him, because even though his abilities are so clearly lacking, and have been, not just this year, but his last 3 years, his numbers have just been abysmal, and we all know why, the injuries and the age and all of those things, he's never altered his approach, not one little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's, you know, if you're a big Kobe fan, a big Kobe supporter, it's like because he's just got this force of will and, you know, he's never going to waver. And I'm kind of looking at it going, well, yeah, but that's a terrible way to play basketball. And what he's doing, and we saw it last night, 4 of 20, shoots an air ball, you know, at the buzzer. You know, that's not the way the game's played anymore. And the game has moved on past him. And you look at Tim Duncan, who came into the league roughly the same time as Bryant did. And, you know, without, a fraction of the fanfare has been, you know, you look at Tim Duncan's numbers on a 36-minute basis, especially early in his career, he was every bit as dominant as Kobe Bryant has ever been. In fact, far more dominant. And then as his career progressed, he took steps to make sure winning was a priority. And that meant him taking a step sideways, a step backwards. And the result is, you know, he's on pace for, you know, they're, you know, quietly, everyone's looking at Golden State. You know, San Antonio's on pace for a 65-66 win season right now, and no one would be surprised if they win an NBA title, which would be Duncan's sixth.
So how do the Lakers handle it from this point on? You know, this is a team that is, look, it's rebuilding. I think most people would say that it's probably got a bright future just because it's L.A. and it's got some money and the salary cap is going to go up. But you've got a guy here who announces in November that he's going to retire at the end of the season. So we still got, what, 4 months?
Yeah, about 60 games.
60 games left.
Four,
He's already, he's clearly marketing his retirement. He wants to sell product while he does it. What do you do if you're the Lakers? You know, when do you decide that Kobe no longer starts?
Well,
you know?
If you're being really cynical about it, which this whole sort of invites it in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best case scenario for the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. Is it becomes Kobe's farewell season. No one pays attention to the fact they're going to be, you know, 15 and 62 or 67 or whatever the number is. And you keep rolling him out there, and he keeps doing his thing, and he gets standing ovations every arena he goes. And every time he does have any kind of glimpse of the old Kobe, everyone at the Staples Center is ecstatic. And you go and pick number one or two or three in the draft, you know, and maybe that's the best possible scenario, Kobe's final gift.
Before we let you scoot, want to talk about the Raptors losing to Phoenix last night. Where is this team right now, Michael?
I think they're in a decent spot. You know, I think they've found a way through some of their injuries, and I think they've found a way. I think Bismack Biyombo is bringing a personality to the team that is needed and is useful. And they've done it through, you know, like the schedule that you've talked about at length and how difficult it has been. So now the schedule is finally turning in their favor. They are going to be at home. For the majority of the next, you know, month or so. They don't go out west again until mid-January. And they're doing good. You know, they've got to this point with a pretty solid record that puts them right in the middle of the Eastern Conference playoff picture. So, you know, I think overall you have to be positive. And I think there's more good than there is cause for concern from what I've seen.
Mike, I appreciate you doing this as always. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks.
It's Michael Granger, Sportsnet. His column on Kobe Bryant's on Sportsnet.ca really is a terrific read. And Mike certainly didn't mince any words, did he? I asked him to list, to list where Kobe ranks. I'm figuring he's going to go, well, since Magic and Bird, he's probably fifth or sixth. And Michael comes back with, well, he's among active players right now. He's a top 10. Then he drops some guys on. So Tim Duncan, there's a strong case to put Tim Duncan ahead of him. You know, it was interesting to hear Michael, who certainly covered a lot more basketball than I have, just say completely and quickly that he certainly doesn't have Kobe Bryant as high as some of us do in his own personal rankings. And it's interesting. It tells you a lot about Kobe's career. And I think it tells you a lot about why Kobe's retirement is going to be so interesting. And it may be, I don't know if you can ever have a retirement that's fraught with drama. This might be it. This might be it in some ways. And it's interesting because you're going to have a very big deal made about Kobe Bryant. And his last game is here on December 10th, by the way, against the Raptors. His last game in Toronto is on December 10th. You're going to have a very big deal made about Kobe Bryant, even while people disagree on sort of where his place is in the NBA constellation. As I said, I mean, I really appreciate Tim Duncan's game. I have Kobe ahead of him. But I also have to admit that the final 3 years of Kobe's career, I think, have taken him out of the equation or have taken him out of the discussion as to where his place might be among the all-time greats in the game. The Detroit Tigers have agreed to terms, we're led to believe, with Jordan Zimmermann, free agent pitcher, on a 5-year, $110 million contract. Those are the terms that have been reported. For some of us, Jordan Zimmermann was the free agent pitcher that the Blue Jays were most likely to have interest in. I think a lot of us, they're not going to have interest in David Price. It's going to be out of their price range. It's going to be out of their range in terms of the number of years he's looking for. Same thing for Zach Greinke. 5 years for $110 million from a distance seems as if that's something that the Blue Jays might have been able to ante up. Now, of course, we know that the Blue Jays aren't in that, as has been shown. They're not in that frame of mind, and we must also bear in mind that when you're talking about a free agent pitcher, there's a reason he's a free agent. He's a free agent because he can go wherever he wants, ostensibly, for however much he wants. Jason Beck covers the Tigers for MLB.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BeckJason. Jason Beck joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jason, thanks so much for doing this. Why Jordan Zimmermann? Why was he the guy the Tigers targeted?
Well, really, from the outset of the offseason, Al Avila, the first-year GM, was pretty clear about, you know, they weren't going to be in on Price or Greinke, but they were going to be targeting guys in that next tier. Guys of Zimmermann, Samardzija was a guy they had discussed. There were maybe a couple other guys. I think Johnny Cueto was a guy who would come up at some point. What drew them to Zimmermann was, first of all, the consistency and being able to deliver. I think he averaged about 195 innings a year over his four full years since coming back from Tommy John. And also the fact that it wouldn't take a hugely lengthy deal to get something done. And now, granted, 5 years is a long deal. I can still remember a time when you wouldn't even consider signing a free agent pitcher for more than three or four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But in this market where you're looking at a 5-year deal compared to maybe 7 years for the top top guys, I think or even 6 years if you believe the rumors on the deal that Johnny Cueto turned down from the Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Zimmermann's deal looks a little bit more reasonable. And really, for what they were looking for, not necessarily an ace, but a frontline starter that they could fit in between Verlander and Sanchez in the rotation, they liked what he brought.
One of the concerns I think a lot of teams had, we know they had this concern. I mean, general managers have said this with Jordan Zimmermann, was the fact that he's 4 or 5 years removed from Tommy John surgery. This contract, the final year of the contract, will be 10 years after Tommy John surgery. And in some ways, if I'm not mistaken, Jason, it's the longest contract given or signed by a post-Tommy John pitcher. Longest free agent contract anyhow. But, I look at the Tigers, and I know that they've had success with Anibal Sanchez, who is another guy who, the injury situation needed to be monitored. What's your sense in how the Tigers viewed the risk and reward of Jordan Zimmermann?
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's something that I'm hoping to get a little bit more clarity on once everything becomes official and you start hearing comments on the record from some of the newsmakers. But it's interesting, especially when you consider how much has been made of the Tigers building up their analytics department.
Mm-hmm.
And really looking into the metrics on some of these issues, really in a lot of their off-season dealings. It's already played a role. Now, have they been doing a whole lot on the medical metrics, I guess is what you would call it? I don't know. I have to imagine they had to do something along those lines. But that said, this is a franchise that's taken chances on injured guys before. Mm-hmm. Anibal Sanchez obviously was one. He got a 5-year deal as well when he was a free agent after the 2012 season.
Right.
So in terms of the length, this kind of matches it, although the dollars obviously are way more in this case. But even going further back, you can pin part of the franchise renaissance on taking chances on injured guys. So Ivan Rodriguez was somebody who had huge concerns about his back before he signed with the Tigers after 2003. And then a couple of years later, they signed Magdalene Ordóñez to that pretty heavy 5-year deal, coming off experimental knee surgery where he had to go to Europe to get it operated on. In those cases, they were able to get creative with the contracts that would limit the Tigers' liability if there was a re-injury really early in the deal. Like I think with Maglio, they could have opted out of that after 1 year if he spent enough time on the DL, specifically with a back injury. And I think it even might have been something like that with Prince Fielder's deal too. But this is a different era, and it's an era where if you believe in the numbers, then you know, it had to be a consideration.
My understanding, too, is that Jordan Zimmermann is from Wisconsin, correct?
Correct. So, he still makes his offseason home there.
Right. So, I mean, I don't pretend to know the geography of the area or anything, but did that have a role in his signing with the Tigers, do you think?
I think it did. Yeah, there was a lot of buzz going into the offseason that if he could, he'd like to stay pretty close to home for a change after spending his entire career in D.C., it's not exactly right next door, and the Cubs obviously would have been closer. But considering you can get from Detroit to Milwaukee in about an hour-long flight, give or take a few minutes, you know, it's pretty close, especially for the money. It was probably as close as he was going to get. So, you know, my impression was, yeah, I think that played a role. Even with the – it was bigger to do that than – that outweighed the challenge of changing leagues and going to a league where he doesn't necessarily know a ton of the hitters.
The other thing too for him is spring training won't be much of a change. He'll be going from Vieira to Tiger Town. He might even be able to have the same spring training accommodations.
Well, it's a little further apart. They're on opposite sides of Orlando. Mm-hmm. I think it's about an hour and a half drive. So he'll probably, you know, he might be able to, depending on which part of town he was on.
Right.
But my guess is he might stay a little bit closer, but at least he stays in Florida. Mm-hmm. So he certainly knows the surroundings there.
Jason, I'm going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this. Thank you, as always.
Thanks for having me on, as always, Jeff.
Take care. That's Jason Beck. Covers the Tigers for MLB.com. Does a terrific job. You can follow him on Twitter, @BeckJason. The Tigers coming to terms 5 years. $110 million with Jordan Zimmermann. Interesting contract because this is a guy, this is a five-year contract for a guy 4 years or 5 years removed from Tommy John surgery. And even though we know that there's a great track record of success with guys coming off Tommy John surgery, there was some concern expressed in some quarters about giving out a multi-year contract, especially contract of over $20 million. To a pitcher who, at the end of the contract, will be 10 years removed from Tommy John surgery. But as you heard Jason Beck say, the Tigers have been more than willing in the past to gamble on injured players with long-term contracts, or I should say to gamble on players who have rehabbed from injuries, and it's worked out pretty well for them. You also heard Jason refer to Johnny Cueto as we were talking to him. Various reports on Twitter. Steve Gilbert from MLB.com, who covers the Diamondbacks, reporting that Johnny Cueto has turned down a 6-year, $120 million offer from the Diamondbacks. So that gives you an idea of where the pitching market is going. As we expect, Zach Greinke and David Price are probably going to be the guys who get 7-year contracts. No indication yet as to whether it was the money, the term, or the team that caused Johnny Cueto to turn down 6 years and $120 million. But that gives you an idea, at least, of where the pitching market is going. The Denver Broncos beat the New England Patriots in overtime last night, the Sunday night game. Poor Tom Brady, by the time the game was over, didn't really have anybody to throw the ball to or even hand it off to. And as a result, the NFL's left with one undefeated team, the team that no one seems to really want to give any credit to. And that's the Carolina Panthers. Troy Rank is the Broncos beat writer for the Denver Post. He covered the game last night. Broncos winning without Peyton Manning. What does this mean for Peyton Manning? What does it mean for the Broncos? Troy Rank will join the Jeff Blair Show when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yikes. Our technical director, Derek Brandeo, just informed me this. Thriller was released 35 years ago. 33. Okay. What to make of that? Anyhow. I mean, it's just one of those things that makes you feel old. Makes a guy feel old. So it's actually been out more than half of my life. God. If we only knew then what we knew now about Michael Jackson. Still a great album nonetheless. Whatever. Still a great album. The Denver Broncos scored a 30-24 overtime win over the New England Patriots last night in the snow in Denver. A perfect night game in Denver. And, well, I think it's safe to say that when the schedule was drawn up, everybody looked ahead to that game. Everybody looked ahead to another Peyton Manning, Tom Brady meeting. And, I thought Bob Costas' halftime blurb last night about Manning and Brady was really well said and pretty much summed up, I think, people's feelings going into that game. My guess is that it was one of those games where if you were a Broncos fan, you were probably more than comfortable with seeing Brock Osweiler go up against Tom Brady. I think for the rest of us, the neutrals, those of us who don't necessarily have a vested interest in how the Broncos, or for that matter, the Patriots do, the notion of Peyton Manning against Tom Brady kind of gave the game a little extra oomph. I think if you're a Broncos fan, you were happy to see Brock Osweiler out there, given what we now know about Tom Brady. Neutrals, probably would have been interesting to see Peyton Manning out there trying to shake off another injury, going toe-to-toe once again with a well-known adversary. I mean, in a lot of ways, these two guys are part of the NFL furniture for a lot of people. Troy Rank covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. Troy Rank joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Troy, thanks so much for joining us today after what must have been a hectic night last night. I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I? That the neutral, we're probably pining for Peyton versus Tom more than anything else. But I've got to think, especially based on what we saw to Brock Osweiler and his ability to manage the game, I think Broncos fans were probably more than comfortable with him at the controls, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand Brock Osweiler isn't replacing the player that most people view in Peyton Manning. This year's Peyton Manning had 9 touchdowns and 17 interceptions and had turned the ball over in 9 consecutive games to start the season. And he was compromised physically with a rib injury and then the plantar fasciitis, which became a tear of the fascia that clearly left him limited against the Chiefs, where he threw 4 interceptions and had 5 completions. So, yeah, locally, there's an understanding. Now, Manning deserves respect, and this needs to be handled the class, but the reality is Brock Osweiler wasn't replacing Peyton Manning of 2013 and 2014. He was replacing a 39-year-old quarterback who couldn't stop turning the ball over. So
yeah.
Locally, they weren't, you know, it isn't a conversation right now, an argument of why is Brock playing. Frankly, there were calls for Brock to play when they were 7-0, but that was never going to happen. And for the same reason, I don't think Brock Osweiler will lose the job as long as he continues to play well. I just think they're going to tell Manning, hey, take as much time as you need, and we'll revisit it when we have to revisit it.
Troy, it really does seem as if all those people who said that Brock Osweiler probably was a better fit for what the Broncos need to do offensively to be successful. It seems as if they were right, weren't they?
Well, he's no doubt he's a better fit for the Kubiak offense. He profiles in some ways like a Joe Flacco, big, strong arm. He's got some mobility. He can bootleg. And more than anything, Jeff, when he's in there, they run the Kubiak offense, which is the quarterback playing primarily under center. And why should that matter? Well, it dramatically improves their running game because when they're in the pistol, the running back's vision gets blocked, so they're a little late in seeing the hole develop, and they're a little late on their cut, and they didn't run the ball well out of the pistol. I mean, that's not opinion. That's fact.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last two games, they've set single-season highs here in rushing yards, and that's not a coincidence. So that is also part of the conversation when trying to look at and evaluate Brock is, he's not turning the ball over. He's turned it over once in two games, and they run the ball dramatically better when they're running that offense because with Manning, they're in the pistol or shotgun.
Tom Brady's now 6-8 overall against the Broncos, including 1-2 in the playoffs. What explains the Broncos' success against Tom Brady?
Well, part of it's being at Denver. He's 2-6 in Denver.
Okay.
Because typically when they play him in New England wins. It's kind of just the old school home road. When he's played him in Denver, they've beaten him. And when they played in New England, they usually clobber him, the Patriots. So part of it is the home field advantage. There's no question that that's an issue. Last night, I mean, in Brady's defense, once Gronk goes down, I mean, they're without Edelman, Amendola, and Gronk. He's throwing the guys I've never heard of. They're
mm-hmm.
on the practice squad. And it hurt him last night because the kid Harper, who was on their practice squad, fumbled a punt that really brought the Broncos back into that game. I mean, they're down 21-7. The crowd's freezing. They're having trouble staying into it. And that muff punt really gave the Broncos life. But, you know, they had a good plan against Brady other than the first drive when inexplicably Gronk beat them. But after that, it was make anyone but Gronk beat you. And they had a pretty good attack that way. And they get after him a little bit, too. When they've had success against Brady, they've pressured him up the middle, made him a little uncomfortable, and they did that again last night at times.
Who's the best team in the AFC right now?
I'd still say the Patriots. If they don't lose Gronk for a significant amount of time, it sounds pretty good so far on Gronk with the knee, that they're not thinking it's serious. If he's out, you know, like 6 to 8 weeks, then I think you could argue that the Broncos are the best team in the AFC. But again, as any Denver fan would tell you, Denver has not had any success playing at New England in recent seasons. So if they have to go to New England in the playoffs, New England would be favored. But I would say I'd give New England in on a neutral field. You know, they win last night, but they can't withstand many more injuries. I mean, New England's vulnerable. They're down to third and fourth stringers at too many key positions. But Denver's defense and their ability to run the ball gives them a shot in the playoffs to beat anybody. I mean, they're just that. And again, if Osweiler continues to protect the ball, that's what compromised them early, Jeff, is their worst issue with their defense is they kept turning the ball over in short fields because their defense has been nailed all season.
Well, and I've got to think, too, if you're in addition to Osweiler, if you're the Broncos, you're looking at C.J. Anderson sort of breaking out of, I guess, almost a season-long slump or a season-long sleep, whatever you want to call it. Of course, his 48-yard touchdown iced the game. But 15 carries, 113 yards, two TDs. Could be another option for the Broncos.
Well, this is about the time last year he took over and ended up making the Pro Bowl based on six games of performance. The issue with CJ is a couple things, Jeff. He hurt his ankle in the first preseason game against Seattle. So his preseason didn't go as well as he'd hoped. First game of the season against the Ravens, he suffers a turf toe. And he tried to play it off because he's trying to keep his job, frankly, because Ronnie Hillman had such a great camp. but he was compromised. He did not play well, and he was adjusting to this new offense where he should fit, but he didn't look like he fit in the new zone blocking scheme. Now, as he's returned to health and the blocking and the line has gotten better, suddenly C.J. Anderson looks like a guy again. And that can't be overstated, because their ability to run the ball and not be predictable, it helps their line tremendously, because their line's still probably mediocre, but they're much better when the other team doesn't know they're passing every down.
So, Troy, it seems funny we're talking about Peyton Manning at the same time that we're talking about Kobe Bryant announcing his retirement. Peyton has said, at least we're led to believe, that he wants to play another year. How do the Broncos handle this? And in some ways, is this going to require John Elway to kind of, I'm not going to say intercede, but is it going to require John Elway to exercise a little political touch here with this situation?
Well, you have to treat him with respect. There's no question. You got to handle it correctly. But no, I don't think this will be an Elway decision in that regard, at least not publicly. Gary Kubiak is a player's coach. It's part of the reason he let Manning, in my opinion, talk himself into the lineup against the Chiefs when he clearly shouldn't have been out there. But that moment actually gave him some leverage. That and Brock Osweiler's play, they continued to ride with Manning when they were 7-0, even though he led the league in interceptions. He had some great moments, but obviously wasn't consistent. And for that same argument, if you're doing what's best by for the team, not the individual, that's why you would go to Peyton and say, look, Brock's 4-0. You know, we're mm-hmm. not going to make a change while he's undefeated. And they're running the ball, and they're running the offense that they were supposed to run from Jump Street. So you got to handle it well. The moment it gets awkward, Jeff, is when Manning says he's healthy, and they say, okay, but you're not the guy. And I could see a situation not unlike Drew Bledsoe and Tom Brady. I think it, what was that, 0-1?
Yep.
Where Brock keeps the job, and then maybe they need Manning at some point, whether it's a game late in the season, a game in the playoffs. You don't know. I mean, no one knows that right now. They're not giving up on him playing again this season. But all of the conversation is on pause until he gets healthy, because he's not healthy right now. And he takes the walking cast off midweek, has to rebuild the strength. The earliest he would return would be at Oakland. What game is that? December 13th. I would think it's more like against the Bengals on that Monday night, which is really feasible for him. But if they're winning and they win the next two games, you just go to Peyton and say, hey, I got to make the best decision for the team at that point. Again, this I'm prefacing with mm-hmm. this. Brock keeps playing like he's playing now.
Troy, you've covered this guy. What do you think Peyton has left? Do you think he's got another year left?
I don't. I mean, you've covered aging athletes, and the problem with quarterbacks is pretty much 39 is the year where they go off a cliff, and it's not for any – he got in great shape. He's stronger. He changed his diet. He did everything possible to get ready for the season, and then you're reminded he's 39 playing in the NFL, and he gets hit, and he gets hurt, and he's slow to recover because he's 39. And I think if he were in a different offense, Jeff, I'd say, yeah, there's a chance he'd play next year. I don't see why he'd want to play next year if he has to go through this. I mean, you don't want to, you know, be a player who you feel like you're hurting your team. And he's never been in that position outside of his rookie year briefly and then this year. So I don't know why at 40, because it wouldn't be here. I mean, mm-hmm. he has to go somewhere else, learn a new offense. I mean, and you'd have to tailor the offense to him as a 40-year-old quarterback. It just doesn't add up for me why he would want to go out and play one more year, because he's only playing to win another Super Bowl. He's not playing. He's really established every record imaginable.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, and again, this is from a distance, I can't imagine he would be interested in being the soft shoulder for Brock Osweiler to lean on as he goes towards the Super Bowl. I can't imagine he'd want to be the win a Super Bowl as the clear number two guy in the team, would he?
Well, and so he's got 4 million reasons to want it, because he gets money back that they pay cut.
That's true.
So if they win the AFC Championship, he gets 2 million back, and if they win the Super Bowl, he gets another 2 million. So there would be incentive. He's helped Brock. He's just not. You've covered guys like this, some of the greatest players ever. They can't also be a mentor. I don't understand why people expect the greatest player to be the best interview, the best mentor. People that are in their own jobs aren't like that. You have mm-hmm. people you work with that are brilliant, yet they couldn't explain one thing to you because they don't talk that way. That's just like, hey, I'm going to do my job. watch me do my job. And that's where how Peyton is. But he communicates with Brock. He would, I think at some point, he would, it would hurt, it would sting, but he's not going to go out, if this is his last year, seen as some selfish guy sitting on the bench holding his helmet pouting. That's just a terrible look. Why would he want to taint his own legacy that way for what amounts to, what, 4 or 5 weeks of an 18-year career? Why would you? I just, he's too smart for that. He would handle at least publicly the right way.
Troy, I appreciate you doing this as always. You be well.
Anytime, Jeff. Take care, man.
Take care. It's Troy Rank, Broncos beat writer for the Denver Post. You can follow him on Twitter at Troy Rank as the Broncos 30-24 win over the New England Patriots in the Sunday night game in the snow in Denver. Brock Osweiler. As a lot of the national writers and a lot of the national commentators in the U.S. predicted, fitting seamlessly in to Gary Kubiak's offense. And as I said, that leaves one undefeated team in the NFL, a team that nobody seems to want to give any credit to, and that is the Carolina Panthers. That is it for us. We will be back tomorrow. Jerry Howarth is going to join us for the Hour of Howarth at some point this week. We haven't firmed up a day, but Jerry will join us ahead of the winter meetings, so we'll have lots of baseball talk ahead. And then at the winter meetings, Shai Davidi, Ben Nicholson-Smith, Mike Wilner, and Barry Davis will have you covered from stem to stern. That's it for us today. Stay tuned for Hockey Central at noon. Have a great day, everybody.